It's time for Twit Wow. It's our holiday special. So, ladies and gentlemen, please do not expect cogent tech commentary on this episode of Twit. We've got John Hodgman. We've got Paul Roderick. We've got Paul and Storm. And we've got Jonathan Colton. And it's our annual get-together where we just talk, have fun, get ready. The most unusual Twit ever is next. You like my hat?
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Audio bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by the new Winamp for Android, featuring wireless sync and one-click iTunes import. Now with free daily music downloads and full-length CD listening parties. Download it for free at winamp.com/android. Video bandwidth for Twit is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Twit, This Week in Tech, episode 385, recorded December 13th, 2012. Next year, Jerusalem. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it, right from your desk. For our special offer, go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone, and enter Twit. And by Ford, featuring Bliss, the blind spot information system with cross-traffic alert and active park assist. Check out these available options on the 2013 Ford Fusion and 2013 Ford Taurus. Or learn more at Ford.com/technology. And by Squarespace, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website, blog, or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code TWIT12. And don't forget to try out their newly launched developer platform for complete code control. And by Audible.com. Sign up for the Platinum Plan and get 2 free books. Go to audible.com/twit2. And don't forget to get your copy of Brandon Sanderson's Legion absolutely free at audible.com/Sanderson. Welcome to Twit, a very special edition of Twit, our holiday episode, which almost didn't happen. We've got a great panel of people who are not going to talk about tech news this week, but instead the spirit of the holidays. Joining us, I want to go clockwise, but I don't know who the guy is in the upper right-hand corner. John Roderick is a surprise fill-in guest. He's joining us from Roderick on the Line, the great podcast, and of course, his band, The Decemberists, which I'm going
to... Oh! There he is, Paul Roderick.
sitting next to him, John Hodgman, who apparently is doing his impression of Gary Sinise in The Fifth Element. I'm just waiting for blood to dribble down his forehead.
Gary Oldman, sorry.
Oh, Gary. I confuse Gary's. But you got the fetlock thing going there.
Yeah, and I got the Commissioner Gordon mustache.
I love that. You know, I love that. Good to have you too, Mr.
Roberts. And it's the Long Winters.
The internet knows that. The internet knows.
December winter. It's all the same. Oh. Also with us is Storm. Where's Storm? There's Storm.
Oh, that's Paul.
Oh, damn. There's Storm. There's Paul. Here's Paul. I was going clockwise. Paul and Storm, you know Paul and Storm, they're very funny. But Paul did not go to Yale, right?
No.
I did not.
All right.
I wore this as a gesture of goodwill to
the
my
only
Ivy
person
friends,
on this show who didn't go to Yale, actually.
Honestly, Paul, that's maybe the most offensive thing you could do.
Yes. Mission accomplished. Where's my banner?
You're insulting the memory of a lot of cosseted white dudes. A lot of pampered. White shoe lawyer dudes. So.
What you can't see, Hodgman, is that I'm wearing a pair of sweatpants that say Bula Bula on the button.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
Yale is everything that's wrong with America.
Says John Roderick. All right, that's Paul. So this must be Storm.
I am Storm.
There is Storm coming to you from the Black Mold Studios in beautiful Brooklyn. Greg DiCostanza.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever called you by your true name.
No one does. It's best not to. It's a kind of a Beetlejuice thing. I'll just appear.
So we've said it once. If I say it two more times, we're in trouble.
He's sent back to his original dimension.
Oh, that wouldn't be a bad thing. And then finally, to the left of the giant candle, it's Jonathan Colton of jonathancolton.com. And the funny thing about this is they're all within one block of each other. So we just tape off the screen to make it look like
we're in the same room. That's right.
Yeah,
they're in the same room.
We've got bunk beds.
Jonathan and I both live in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
John Roderick lives in another major American city called Seattle. Mm. I don't know where Paul and Storm live.
Baltimore and Philadelphia.
Baltimore and Philadelphia.
In that order.
Now, somebody told me that John Roderick is kind of like the Rain Man, that you can say things and he will just say the answer, just like he did right there.
Right.
That's right. But usually I incorporate Hitler somehow.
Well, we're fortunate he left that out because this is supposed to be festive. This is our... Now, I wasn't, to be honest, I wasn't going to do this show. And Paul and Storm insisted.
Well, yeah. I don't know
about it. you can't take away one of their major. I mean, this has been on their calendar since last year.
Apparently,
I live for this thing, Leo. How am I supposed to get my hour and a half of Hodgman abuse if we don't do this show?
Last year was such a car wreck that we just thought I'm not going to do that show anymore.
Why not? Was it a car wreck? Was it a car wreck? Why was it a car wreck?
Just like this. It was just.
It was just like this. It was a terrible disaster.
That was more of a train wreck than a car wreck.
I want some credit for the improvement in the background.
I was going to say, I was all set to ask if you had moved the cardboard box this year.
Yeah, but everything that you accomplished with upgrading your background has been reversed by John Hodgman.
Yeah.
Who's downgraded his background?
Oh, my God. He's in his bedroom with an unmade bed and some strange dude with a beard.
That's Brooklyn.
It's beginning to feel a lot like Christmas.
I miss the sideways guitar case in the backdrop of Jonathan Colton, though.
Yeah, yeah. No, I agree.
Yeah.
I got one of those. I got it covered.
Yeah, you got some stuff. You got some boxes and junk back there, I bet.
We're in a real studio over here. There. Look at that. So the part of the problem with doing the show is that we have no agenda whatsoever. It's just really a chance to get together, drink heavily, and talk about the sad disappointments of 2012.
Well, I'm glad I came.
You'll fit right in.
What are you drinking tonight, Leah?
I am drinking, it's an interesting concoction. It's Armenian brandy, Ararat brand, which I think is, isn't that the mountain where Noah's Ark finally landed?
That's Noah's Ark is there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, that's where Stark did it.
It's 20-year-old brandy. But it's kind of a concoction because I thought, for the festive occasion, I would throw some miniature marshmallows in it, but they dissolved almost instantly.
Yeah, yeah. So that's why they use Armenian brandy regularly as a marshmallow solvent.
Can I see those marshmallows go? I want to see them.
It's almost like the perfect marshmallow solvent. Now, I've added an orange peel to give it some flavor, but they just... we'll check back in a minute or two. It doesn't happen.
We're not going to stare at it for 40 minutes?
We could. I'll tell you what.
That would fill up a lot of the show.
Why don't I do a commercial? And while I'm doing the commercial, and then we'll check back and see how the marshmallows are doing. That's how they do it on Julia Child. We're just going to take a break. When we come back, we'll pull it from the oven. I'm sure it'll be...
Actually, I'm pretty sure that was public television, so...
Yeah, you wouldn't know that. It's possible that I've saturated it by putting so many marshmallows in it that no longer... Yeah.
Well, more brandy, then.
You've exceeded its marshmallow carrying load.
Exactly. It's a super suspension or something.
You've turned it into a marshmallow Armagnac colloid.
it's hyper-mallowed.
You stick a stick in there and you tap it, and the marshmallow then coagulates on the stick.
Oh, so they're not Newtonian marshmallows.
Right. Do you have a book of matches?
Oh, let's try it. Anybody have any
on fire? Are they
quantum mallows?
That was the last time anyone saw Leo alive.
Let me ask you two questions. Do you have a book of matches? And is that Santa hat made out of polyester?
yes and yes. Okay, you must have some matches. Don't you smoke something?
Leo went out the way he always wanted to, with a great big
Leo
glass of Armenian brandy
on an open fire. Marshmallows dissolving in Armagnac.
Our show, you know, our show is actually brought to you by a local company that you guys probably know well. Here, go ahead. Squarespace.com. Let's just see. I don't know what. You know, on broadcast television, I think there are rules about this.
This is advertising. If you die, this is advertising gold for Squarespace.
Gold. They'll be showing this on YouTube over and over again.
Just yell Squarespace right before you do it.
Squarespace!
That's the worst battle cry ever.
You have to drop the lighter into the glass, Liam.
For Squarespace.
Yeah, keep the lower third up. Squarespace! It doesn't work. You know, I think we found out that marshmallows are actually a very effective fire retardant.
I think they're going to be really happy with this ad.
Now, Hurricane Sandy. Now, this was an event that probably you guys have some stories about because, of course, at least some of you are on the East Coast. I don't know if you know, but Pier 1, which is the network provider for Squarespace, this is still a Squarespace. Thank you. You can leave the lower third up. Was of course, flooded in Hurricane Sandy, and they made a mistake. They put the generators in the basement. So the power went out. The generators
are... Pier 1, the retailer of wicker chairs, and
I may have the name wrong.
Oh, isn't Pier 1...
It could be Pottery Barn. It's one of the big network operations centers.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Anyway, they did have one generator, but it was in the attic. So there's two big clients up here. One is Squarespace, of course, and the other is Joel Spolsky's company. They make Trello. Wonderful.
One of my children is going insane. All right. I'll go see it. You take care of it.
They just love Trello.
Big Trello fans.
They heard there was fire happening and a Squarespace ad, and they were like, oh, let me see that. I hear Leo's going on and on about Pier 1.
There they are. Is that one of yours, John, or one of Paul's?
No. It's just a child who lives.
Is that one of Paul Roderick's children?
It's just one of the many children that lives here.
It's one of the murder practice children.
If I ever have to dispose of the body of a marshmallow child, I'll know how to do it.
Dissolve it in Armenian brandy. It's gone forever. In any event, Squarespace.
Anyway, Squarespace
wanted to keep. Well, they knew that the power was going to go out. That potentially this would affect the I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of customers. And Anthony Casalena, the CEO of Squarespace, along with some of the employees from Trello and some of the Squarespace employees, went over to the building, and they brought gas, or I guess it was diesel probably, upstairs from the basement to the generator upstairs all night long in a fire brigade to keep those servers up and running so that your stupid blog would not go down.
Wow.
Meanwhile, a hospital across town was... having to move the babies out of intensive care.
Exactly. Exactly. That's dedication.
Thank God they kept that generator up.
They did not. They did not go down. The entire Sandy episode, Squarespace didn't go down. And that's what I call a commitment to customers, a commitment to service, a commitment to uptime. And it's one of the reasons you want a Squarespace site. But it's not even the most important reason. The most important reason is the software, the content management system that runs on top of this great web hosting. It's the best in the business. Their latest version does something called mobile responsive design. It's a site that expands and shrinks depending on conditions. So if you're looking at it on a big screen like this, it will fill the site, and you don't have to do anything. There's no mobile site. It's just if you're looking at a little iPhone, it works perfectly. You don't have to do anything. In fact, even when you upload images to your site, it automatically makes 7 different versions so that there's a that's how it does it. Right, like that. Look at that. 7 different images so that your site will look great on any.
Ta-da.
That's the last time I put marshmallows in my cognac. Squarespace.
I want that to happen to my website, man.
I don't know about your website, but I'll tell you, Squarespace sites did not go down. They never go down. You cannot bring them down, and they have such great software. They look so good. If you're a photographer, an artist of any kind, maybe perhaps a musician, you should be looking at Squarespace for your next website. And here's the deal. Go to squarespace.com, click the yellow Get Started button. You can do it for 2 weeks free. You got the run of the place, no credit card needed, nothing. Just set it up. You can import all your content from your existing blog, movable type blogger, and
WordPress.
WordPress, thank you. They just have that importer and also exporter, so you're never stuck at a Squarespace site. And now, look at the pricing. $8 a month for the standard plan, $16 a month for the whole kit and caboodle. That's unlimited bandwidth, unlimited storage, unlimited blogs, galleries, unlimited everything. Whoa! They are blowing it up. They're at squarespace.com.
We got a monster eight.
Holy cow! That hurt. So here's the deal. Go to squarespace.com. Do try it for free. You don't need any offer code. But if you decide to buy 10% off when you use our offer code, TWIT12. You know what? We've been with Squarespace for years now. I just pray that they don't leave us. So Squarespace, guys, this was an aberration. Usually we do a great ad. Squarespace.com. Show them, folks. Go at home. Show them how much you love them. Sign up for a site today. Tell them Paul Roderick sent you. It'd be good.
Well, wait, check the marshmallow status before you. How we doing marshmallows?
We actually have saturated because they haven't dissolved at all. I put a lot more brandy in there. And you're probably thinking I'm a lion sack of you know what. But lion sack of posset.
One of your PAs probably just scooped them out while you weren't looking.
No, they looked like sad old men. They were just shriveled up. It was terrible. So let's talk about now both John and Paul have disappeared.
I don't know what's going on.
And now, and by the way, you can see that this is absolutely the worst I've ever seen in terms of backdrop.
John, you know what's crazy? That is John Hodgman's entire apartment. What you're looking at, that's his whole apartment. That's the kitchen there on the right.
I was cleaning up. That's so nice.
No, John, get into bed. Do the rest of this podcast from bed.
This is something you don't usually see. Hollywood star John Hodgman in his native habitat.
This is Christmas right here. This is so totally Christmas. Watching John Hodgman make a bed.
You know, I would have thought he'd have made some money on that Apple stuff, but
there
I guess
should be a Tom Waits song playing. Just throw that up with more of him making his bed.
Hallelujah, making his bed on Christmas Eve.
Okay, I'm doing something right now. So.
It's okay. You can have the children on. I think it can't get any worse than this.
I don't want you to see my children, Leo.
Okay. I don't blame you. Do they look like you?
And on Christmas Eve,
sort of a Bill
stuffing the pillow.
Sounds like Bill Cosby covering Tom Waits.
And Santa.
You know, Tom Waits
put the marshmallows into the drink.
I'd like everyone to know. Have you finished your advertising?
Yes.
I'd like to tell everyone about my book. That is all now available in paperback and audiobook. I got to keep the lights on here. I got to keep the bed made at johnhodgman.com.
Do you have some fancy exploding graphics that can illustrate this book for us?
No.
Chad can do it. There you go.
There
you go. Look at that.
Nice.
Wow. Thank you very much.
He's good.
And that, I'm doing a plug in there for Warren Ellis's new book, Gun Machine. Warren Ellis, a very famous comic book writer and novelist, has a new crime book out, which is really good. It's scary.
Isn't that nice of you plugging up?
And he's giving these books away. He'll leave one somewhere in the world, and this I think that's in New York City, take a picture of it, and then the first person who finds it can take it, and that might just be a random person, or the first person who identifies where it is and sends an email to him will get a free copy. I think it's a very good book promotion.
But they already have a copy because they found one.
No, he'll give two away. One, he'll give away one to the person who identifies where that book is from the photo.
Ah.
And then obviously that one he just leaves there. So whoever takes it, whether or not they're a big Warren Ellis fan or they just figure it's garbage and they have to throw it away or something.
That looks like Columbia.
Well, maybe you're right. It's certainly not Yale. That's the only thing I know.
No.
No, no. Oh, no.
Oh, no.
And I'm drinking. We were talking before about the origin of eggnog, and I used the internet to find out that eggnog is one of many possets of Old England. A posset being warm, scalded milk mulled with wine or ale. And I decided to make some, and I didn't have any wine or ale, so I put in Fernet Branca. And now I feel like I'm drinking a pine cone dipped in Miracle Whip.
So you have milk and Fernet Branca in there?
It actually tastes pretty good.
It sounds terrible. It sounds like a medicine milkshake.
Well, have you had Fernet Branca?
I have, yes.
It's the hipster.
So you know that it can't be worse than Fernet Branca.
Well, I guess that's true. That's a good point. Adding milk can only improve it, really.
Milk and Fernet Branca, it's only less, it's a little less bad than Fernet Branca by itself.
I like Fernet Branca a lot, but I like all those weird tasting things.
What is, you know, I see all the hipster friends of mine drinking that. What is that?
It's very big in San Francisco.
It's huge.
Yeah. Cooks drink it. Chefs drink it after hours to prove to each other that they're still tough.
Where is the origin of Fernet Branca?
Fernet Branca is an Italian liqueur, one of many Amaros, which is Italian for bitter, which order as an aperitif or digestif in almost any Italian restaurant. You'd see a dozen or more. If you go down to Mario Batali's restaurant, Lupa, here in New York City, you'll see a wall of these Amaros, and there are many, many different brands, different kinds of varying intensity of bitter medicinal flavors. Some are sweeter, some are more bitter. Fernet Branca, I believe, was originally designed as a medicine for women who are suffering discomfort during a certain time of the month.
You're kidding. This is Italian Midol?
I think that if my memory serves, you know, all of those bitters
are medicinal.
Yeah, they were medicinal. The alcohol is a solvent, much like brandy is a solvent for marshmallows. Alcohol is a solvent for herbs and spices. And when herbal medicine was the only medicine, alcohol proved to be a very effective means of conveying medicinal herbs into the body.
It's a tincture, and
it worked fantastic because everyone felt great after they drank it.
Sure.
See, yes, this is why I attended Yale University to learn all sorts of interesting facts like this.
This is what you learn at the big Ivies. So I understand
Italian medicinal liqueur, and it's very piney.
It's good.
You're wrong. You're all wrong.
You know, it's become the hipster drink in San Francisco, and I don't quite understand that.
I think everyone's looking for a story to tell.
Maybe so.
On Christmas Eve, in John Hodgman's bedroom, Fernet Branca in the mug.
So are you guys all going to do that crazy cruise thing again, the JoCo crazy cruise?
We sure are. We're gearing up for it right now. As a matter of fact, this Sunday, Paul and Storm and I and Scarface will get on the very same boat that the cruise will be on to go on a test cruise.
That's the thing we
have to do for work.
That's a junket. Come on. A test cruise? Like you don't know?
It is a site inspection, John.
How long is the site inspection?
Inspecting the site. It's 7 days. In the Caribbean, and it's a cruise. We're going on a cruise. Because we want to make sure, we want to prepare everything. We want to make sure everything's cool for everyone.
Sure.
We want to make sure all the spaces are up to our high standards.
So is this the same boat you took last year?
No, it's a brand new boat. We moved to a different cruise line. We're on We're on Royal Caribbean now, and it's a bigger ship. It's called the Freedom of the Seas.
Oh, yeah.
And so, it's many thousands of people. I don't. What's the capacity on that ship? Do you guys know?
God. It's like 3,600 passengers.
Jeez, yeah. Louise. So it's
huge. There's a skating rink. There's a climbing wall. There's a wave pool. It's insane. So I'm looking forward to seeing the ship. It's gonna be kind of awesome. I think.
And when will be the Joko Cruise Crazy Cruise itself?
It is this February. This coming February. February. What is it? 10th. Is that right? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. 10th to the 17th.
You're gonna be so sick of cruising by then because you'll. This
will
be
your
second cruise in
2 months.
All
the food and the islands and the sand and the beaches. It's gonna be a real drag.
It has a capacity of 3,634 passengers and 1,360 crew.
Wow!
So says
Crazy
Wikipedia.
Town.
Wow!
It is a town.
It has a Ben and Jerry's on board.
It's huge. Wow!
It does.
So but that it's, means it's there's plenty of space for your prospective fans. Tell me what a Joko cruise is like. What happens on the cruise?
Well, we have a bunch of different kinds of entertainers, comedians, musicians, and other. We do a couple of we do a main show every day with a couple of performers, and then there are other events. There are late night events, dance parties, and karaoke.
Nice, because the cruise year, entertainment is usually kind of cheesy. So this
the nice thing is we sort of fit in around. The standard cruise entertainment. So it's right. A completely separate private list of events. And my favorite thing about it is just, you know, in this day and age, there are all these online communities, and this is one of those rare opportunities to get together with a fantastic community of people in actual meet space. And it's really kind of amazing for all of us to have all these people that we have corresponded with and known only online, all in the same place and sharing the same experience. It's surprisingly powerful to be with real people these days. You forget.
Yeah. And these things are wildly successful. I mean, you know, I do cruises with geekcruises.com, and, you know, typically it's 60, 100 people, like Mac Mania. We just did Mac Mania, and it was about, 85 people. There, you just saw a little bit of a map of the cruise right there. And
you'll be on the cruise.
I think John Hodgman is jealous. But you get how many people do you get on these cruises, Jonathan?
We've been growing bigger and bigger every year. So the first year we were at what, 400?
Wow.
No, yeah, three something.
370, yeah.
Yeah, Storm knows better than I. Storm's the numbers guy. Where are we at, Storm?
We had the first cruise in 2011 was 372. The second year was 540. And this year we are expecting a total group size of around 700.
Wow. So you're going to take over that ship.
Actually, not really. I mean, we're less than, what, a 7 into 30? We're what, like half the ship? We're really, we're a sizable group, but we're really only a portion of the actual passengers on the ship.
Oh, well, that sounds exciting.
Although someday it would be fun to take over an entire ship. Wouldn't we'd have be? To take over a smaller ship. Oh, yeah. But,
You're getting there.
Not by force. You understand what I'm saying.
Some of the smaller cruise ships are 450 people. I think you could do it.
Oh, we could totally do it, yeah. But who wants to go on a crappy small cruise ship?
They're not crappy. The little ones, they don't have the climbing walls, but they have a piano bar.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, let's cram 400 people into a piano bar. That sounds like a blast.
the Somali Pirate Cruise. That's the one we want to go on. Did any of you... Did any... Oh, look, there's a small... This is like How to Succeed in Advertising. John has grown a small head on his shoulder.
Good reference.
Yeah.
the children have
That's
spoken.
A boy.
There is your Christmas card.
Kids write the darndest things.
Lies, the paper says. Lies. Did any of you go to the 12-12-12 concert yesterday? The big benefit for the Sandy refugees?
I couldn't get tickets.
Really?
Also, I was having steak with Jonathan Goldman.
There you go. Looked like an amazing. How did you survive? How did you survive the hurricane?
Very easily.
Where we were, it was not.
Like there might have been some dental damage, however.
Yeah, that's the only problem. Where we were, there was just some rain and some wind, which is why it was so weird to see other parts of Brooklyn that had been completely.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Leveled.
We were in Park Slope, so we were protected by our dome of liberal sanctimony. The weather did not touch us at all. We just exchanged sustainably harvested organic Halloween candies with each other in our homemade and or Etsy sourced costumes and enjoyed ourselves while Red Hook and Staten Island drowned.
It's amazing. The localization.
It was terrifying. Everyone thought that it was just fine. But then over the next couple of days, you began to understand better the damage. And of course, then we started to run out of gas and we started to run out of food. ATMs were running out of money. Very thin veneer of civilization was beginning to chip away. Luckily, I had already put samurai swords all over my car, and had started driving around with my shirt off, wearing a gigantic wrestling mask.
Well, and is that when John Roderick moved in with you?
Yeah, John. What are you saying?
I should say, for those of you listening on audio, and there are a substantial portion of our audience does not see what is going on, that John Hodgman has a small child on his shoulder who has written a note. What does that note say, John?
It says, big lie. Oh, it says, big lies, huge lies.
That's nice. Mm. You've trained her well, John.
Yeah. That's right.
But in any case, luckily I had already outfitted my massive 16-wheel supercar and was able to rescue a few people and then
apparently mute his microphone.
And then he muted his microphone.
Yeah. Whatever he said was classified anyway.
Of course, it's classic Hodgman. Classic Hodgman. Boy, oh boy. And it cannot be replicated.
So I understand that. Did Roderick do an album with you guys? What was the? What somebody was saying that you guys.
Well, so I'm glad you asked, Leo, because John Roderick and I,
one Christmas at a time.
That's right. This summer, John Roderick and I got together and said, "Hey, let's make a bunch of money by doing covers of classic Christmas songs. Everybody's doing it. Wow. It's obviously a way to get rich." And then when we got together, we realized we didn't like any Christmas songs. And so we wrote our own. So it's an album of all original Christmas songs, which is maybe not the best way to make $1 million, but it was a lot of fun. We did it very quickly and enjoyably this summer.
Is it weird doing Christmas songs in the summer?
It is, except, you know, the when you're doing a Christmas song, it's I don't know. You know, I always try to write around the thing that I'm trying to write about, which is...
You've done Christmas songs before. Beta Prime is a Christmas song.
I have. Car and Beta Prime and Christmas is Interesting is another one. And, you know, I like to find stuff that's a little bit just an offshoot of the idea of Christmas. So, you know, one of my favorite songs in the album is a song called The Week Between, which is about that week between Christmas and New Year's that's kind of this melancholy... weird nowhere time.
You're just not. Go ahead. Go, don't let me interrupt.
No, I'm not going to stop. I'm not going to stop just because
he's.
It's kind of funny that Hodgman's going to yell at us about
it. Of all people, John Hodgman, who got his plug in.
Guys,
before.
I love commercials. Yeah. Yeah, I love commercials.
I know you do.
Guys, are we still talking about Squarespace?
Hey, no, I was just talking about the new hit holiday album, One Christmas at a Time.
I think, is there any way we could get you guys to perform a little bit of that?
That's it right there. That was interpreted.
Storm, is that a gallon jug of Jägermeister?
It's the largest bottle I've ever seen, actually.
It's impressive.
Yeah.
Talk to the deer, folks. Talk to the deer.
But that is a tradition, actually, of, I think that started... early on many years ago when we first started doing these shows. And it's
become the Jaeger is an important part of the show.
It is.
And now Storm's the only one representing.
Yeah.
I have my bottle.
I'm having some apple juice here.
Somewhere my bottle is.
You have 2 fingers of apple juice, Jonathan? I mean, your apple juice neat?
It's a single.
2 fingers, 4 fingers, whatever it takes.
Single malt apple juice. It's a. Yeah. There you go. There we go.
Oh, yeah. Look at that.
Look at that.
Wow. Yeah. Big bottle.
That's a plenty big bottle of Jaeger.
Is it as big as yours? I don't know.
Well, I don't like to brag. But it's pretty
the
big
camera
honor.
Adds 10 pounds.
So there's probably no way,
Leo.
Given
pour
the
it on the marshmallows, pour it on the marshmallows.
Oh, they've already started to.
They're started to go. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's put a little.
I don't know how we could perform with this. I imagine there's some crazy Skype delay that would make us sound terrible, like bad.
You know
musicians.
What, Jonathan? We've played under worse conditions than that.
Here, let's just see if we can clap along together.
Perfect.
One Christmas at a time. One Christmas at a time. Oh, yeah. One Christmas at a time. One Christmas at a time.
Christmas.
Oh, yeah.
Whoa. Big eBay.
Yep. It's like that. It's like 10 original songs that sound just like that. It's really good.
Oh, my God. You guys are going to love it. I'm serious. You guys are really going to love it.
No, buy it now.
The title track is the catchiest thing I've heard in about 10 years. And you will hear 10 seconds of it, and you'll be caught in your brain, and you'll be happy about it.
All
right,
let's
drink it off.
Let's play. Let's play. We could play a little bit. We've got the technology. I'm going to get Chad. He's going to. I think it's online on your website, JonathanColton.com.
It is. It's on. It's actually. It's probably on Spotify too. It's on Spotify and iTunes. It's in all the places. You know, you can get it.
All right. So we'll pull it up here. And while we're pulling it up, let me do a little ad for another sponsor. A sponsor with even a better sense of humor than Squarespace. So they're going to love this. It's called the Ford Motor Company. Perhaps you've heard of them.
The what?
I think you should just let Paul Roderick talk for 2 minutes about the Ford Motor Company. And
Paul, have you ever driven a Ford automobile?
Listen to me right now. I'm going to tell you the serious truth about Fords. As a touring, as a touring musician, there's only one motor vehicle, and that is the Ford E350 van, 15-passenger van.
Yep.
Any other van by any other maker is insufficient to the task.
I think that's actually true.
Yeah.
I would concur.
Yeah. Now, I wish that Ford would put some of the high-end, technology in the van that they put in their cars. I don't know. Do you get things like the blind spot information system, Bliss, in that van? Do you have Bliss in that van?
You don't want to mess around with any of that sissy crap. Put a V10 motor in the front of a steel box, and you drive it across America.
Yeah, it's basically a big black coffin filled with metal parts.
Just drive across America with a snake on your neck and a dream.
Well, for those of you that are not doing that, you might want to take a look at Bliss. Bliss keeps you from driving into traffic. You could use this, John. Watch what happens. It's got detectors, some sort of sensors on the rear quarter panels of each side that detect blind spots. And when traffic is in your blind spot, it'll actually warn you on the mirror. It has a little visual, and there's an audible tone that lets you know that there's a car in your blind spot. Now, that's a good thing.
Here's another thing that will help you in those same situations. That is learning to drive when you are young, and then continuing to practice driving as you get older, and checking your mirrors, and not being a dope.
I'll give you an E350 van. It's a big blind spot there. Now, how about this? This must have happened to you once in a while. you're backing out of a parking space. I guess it doesn't happen in an E350 van, but to me, I'm driving a Ford Taurus, or I'm driving my Mustang, or perhaps I'm driving the 2013 Fusion, which I'm very excited about. And there are two E350 vans on either side of you. You can't, as you're backing out of the parking lot, you can't see around the back of the van. But this is so cool. It actually has, it will look around the corner and let you know if there is an, if somebody out there driving along and actually bleeps at you. Now, that's pretty cool.
Does every car come with an autonomous drone flying camera? So
they're getting
that it
can... very close. They're getting very close. How about this? Have you ever used the automated, the active park assist in a Ford vehicle?
I never have.
This is
scary. I like the looks of it, though.
So you're driving along in the car, and it actually looks at parking spaces, and when one is big enough for you, it says, hey, I'm looking. Hey, I found a spot. Watch this. Space found. Pull forward. So you pull forward, you put it in gear, and then you take your hands off the wheel. Watch this.
Get the F out.
I'm not kidding. It actually parks you. I've done this. It's kind of amazing. It does all the geometry. It does parallel parking perfectly. And then you now this is key because I didn't do this. You take it out of gear and you turn off the engine. I actually let it back right into the car behind me. But that's me.
I am very interested in John Roderick's opinion of this technology.
What do you think, John?
The problem is that that natural selection should be weeding out drivers that can't pass. And these technologies are thwarting natural selection. And our roads are going to be filled with old people and people that should never be behind the wheel.
People who can't parallel park.
Yeah.
But they're already there.
You should stay home or you should drive around in a rascal.
Leo, can I send you a link to a YouTube video of me taking 2 minutes to unpark a car that John Roderick parked?
Yes. Send the link to Chad and we'll put it on the air.
All right, I'm going to send it to Chad. So it's really great. It's great for falling asleep.
We're going to get Alan Mulally, the CEO on the show of Ford. He came from Boeing where he had designed the 777 cockpit. He's an expert in avionics. And one of the things I asked him, when are we going to get a car that drives itself? He said, never. Now, I don't think that's true, but I think that's their position right now is, look, we're not designing cars that drive themselves. That scares people. But we are doing what we did in the Boeing cockpits. You still have a pilot, but what we're doing is we are helping the driver be a better driver by giving them the kind of information they need to be a better driver. Same thing we did on the Boeing cockpits. We give them the information, but ultimately it's the human in control. And that's what's so cool.
Can you ask them to hurry up and make the jet car already?
I mean, I keep saying that. I said, I was at an event with Alan, a dinner at CES last year, and somebody did ask him that. When are we getting flying cars? And he said, no. He said, are you kidding me? Think about it. Really, seriously. Do you want flying cars? Do you really?
If they had blind spot
maybe
protection,
you
sure.
Get all this autonomy in there, maybe. But I'm telling you, you don't want the kind of people you see on the road today flying.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That's not a good idea. You do want to take a look at the amazing stuff in the 2013 Ford Fusion and the 2013 Ford Taurus. These are available technologies, the Bliss with cross-traffic alert and the Active Park Assist. In all seriousness, I'm going to be spending some time at the Ford booth at CES, talking to their CTO, Paul Mascarenhas, talking to some of the amazing Prasad, who's opened the Silicon Valley Ford office, where they're getting developers to write software for the API in Ford vehicles. It's amazing what they're doing. They're really seeing the automobile as a platform for technological advancement. It's very exciting. I know you guys, I know you're Brooklyn hipsters, Maryland hipsters.
Mm-hmm. Some of us.
Wherever you are.
If I can just comment, I feel like...
I'm going to regret this, but go ahead.
The 1967 Ford F-250 was a perfect motor vehicle.
Yes.
And they never should have changed the design at all. They should still be making that truck.
I drive a 2010 Mustang, and I have to say, I agree. I love the big iron and 8-cylinder engine. It's just power. It's wonderful. But I also admire what Ford's doing, which is taking all that great technology, that engine, the drivetrain, real American cars, and then adding technology to make them smarter, better, more exciting. And I think that's a perfect melding. I want you to go to Ford.com/technology, check it out, And also go to a Ford dealer near you. You'll go further in a Ford. I don't know. You think they'll pay us for that ad?
I bought it.
Did you buy it?
I'll pay you. That was fun. How much you want?
Yeah. I'm not kidding. You hipsters, you go, no, I'm going to drive a Saab. I'm going to drive, a Subaru. Uh-oh. So here's a car.
That, John Roderick left me about parked. A half inch on either side. He parked the car.
Now, how many back and forths is that now?
You can't get it out, can you? How did he get it in?
He literally muscled the cars out of the way. Does the Ford parking assist let you say, like, I would like to touch each one of these cars as I am parking?
No, it won't let you do that. It won't let you touch the car.
Yeah, see, in Brooklyn, that's how we do it. This is a standard. Look at this. This is a pretty standard parking situation.
Look at this.
I feel like there should be some theme music or something.
How many back and forths did it take you, Jonathan?
Yeah, this is where you're almost out.
I didn't count. But it really took me about 4 minutes to get out of the space.
And John, Paul, is it your feeling that this is some sort of test of manliness?
Numbers.
No, but when I parked that car initially, I didn't touch either car.
Close. 12. Take 12.
Almost there. Here we go.
Yay. Oh, he's free. Yeah. Yeah. Yay. Nice job. Nice job.
Oh, but then you stop.
Yeah. Wow. Rock and roll.
Chad, you're a genius. I love it. Yeah.
I know. You guys are all musicians. I'm hanging out with, like, these hip, cool musicians. I'm just some old fart from some small town in California, but I got a horn.
And you can buy and sell the lot of us.
And I'm not afraid to blow it.
And for the record, Leo, we're not really hanging out. I mean, it's,
No, I'm not with you guys. I understand. You're putting up with me. I understand. No, I can understand that. You don't want to be, tarnished by hanging out.
Oh, boy, the holiday blues are hitting hard all of a sudden.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's all that marshmallow and brandy.
It's a bad combination, Paul, I got to tell you.
It brings the sadness on.
It brings on the sadness. Sometimes I get in a fight, but mostly I just cry.
I was skeptical, but looking at that glass, there is decidedly fewer and smaller marshmallows in it now.
No, it's working, but it's not working as well as it did the first time. It just dissolved.
It's not like actively smoking now or anything.
No. And I think we have reached marshmallow saturation.
I think the problem was we're expecting
peak marshmallow,
to be like
Leo. What, Storm?
Well, I was going to say, we were expecting it to be like the end of Terminator 2 when, he goes into the mix and it's all gooey and it just didn't play out that way. So I think it was just the expectations were too high.
I probably oversold it. I am sorry. I just didn't expect that. I thought, because you put marshmallows in hot chocolate and they'll sit there and they'll float and you can, they last for a while. And I thought that was my expectation. And it turns out in brandy,
they were gone.
They don't last a long time.
Yeah.
You know what would cure those holiday blues, Leo?
What would that be?
Perhaps a web series musical, such as one that is coming out soon by Paul and Storm that I would love to plug right now.
All right, please do. Go right ahead. Anything a Yale man says, I'm interested in.
And it has blind spot protection.
Yes.
Does it have blind spot protection? Or serious?
It does. And it has parking assist.
What is this? Is this a new project for you guys?
This is a new project.
You're talking about Learning Town, Paul?
What's that? Yes, I'm talking about Learning Town.
Learning Town? Oh, that doesn't sound good. That sounds educational.
All the cool hip musicians are talking about it.
What is it? What is
Learning
it?
Town. It's all anybody talks about now.
Storm and I have just finished filming a web series that comes out on January 15th. The series is called Learning Town, and it's coming out on the Geek and Sundry YouTube channel, which is Felicia Day's YouTube channel.
Oh, you're spending some of that YouTube money. Spending some of that good YouTube money.
Google money. We filmed it at their brand new studio space. Like
in LA?
They just opened up
you
in LA.
You went to the LA space and you filmed that?
Yeah, we filmed before they even opened. We got to christen the studio. It was pretty great.
I understand they have like state-of-the-art green screen and they don't have any Armenian brandy.
They had no Armenian brandy.
But they have everything else that you could ask for.
It was pretty great. Yeah, but it's It's a musical. It's 10 episodes. It's about a comedy music duo named Paul and Storm who take over.
Oh, so it's like Flight of the Conchords.
Kind of. Then we take over an old-timey kilt show.
Kilt?
Sorry, I'm thinking
kilt?
Of...
I'm is it a kilt factory? Because I would love that.
No, they take over a children's show. There we go. Hey, look.
Paul,
it's our
Storm. We're Paul and Storm. We have a brand new web series called Learning Town.
Yeah, but we blew all our budget on the title graphics. That's why we're in this empty room.
So without any further ado, roll the title.
Learning Town. That's Comic Sans. Comic Sans. Stop it. Comic Sans word.
Paul and Storm.
Paul and Storm.
That's good. That makes me want to watch it.
So it's this duo. They take over a long running children's show after the original host dies, and they're completely incompetent at it.
That sounds good. That sounds good.
We're very excited about it. It's a lot of fun. John Roderick thinks it's awesome.
Yeah, I do. It's true. Paul and Storm are very, very talented young men, and I support all their endeavors.
I have to say, I've read some of the script and I've heard some of the songs, and it's the kind of thing that I'm so happy to see the Paul and Storm doing, because it's the kind of thing they were born to do. I'm very excited to see the finished product.
Is it like a children's show, but it kind of got grown up a little bit, or what? I mean,
yeah, it's we say it's not for kids.
Yeah,
it's the children's show is the show within a show.
So it's like when the drunk cigarette. Yeah. that's where I was going, but okay, yeah, Paul just kind of illustrated that in a graphic fashion.
Yeah, it's all about puppets having sex. No, it's about the people behind the scenes trying to keep the burning Viking ship afloat. And
so that's cool. So did Felicia Day call you to get involved in that, or
she called us personally?
That's neat.
She begged you, right? Didn't she beg you?
I believe.
Wasn't she on her hands and knees in some sort of skimpy outfit begging you?
That's a strong word.
That's just your fantasy there, Jonathan. So now you met her probably in the Geekapalooza thing that you did?
No, we actually met her. We kind of stalked her over Twitter in only semi creepy fashion. When we first started our podcast some time ago, one of our little goals that we set was that we wanted Felicia Day to notice us.
Yeah.
Without her actively trying to make it. I mean, we could easily have just, bugged her over and over on Twitter or something.
Right.
But no, we just wanted it to happen sort of organically. And it took a few months, but she finally acknowledged our existence. And we celebrate that day.
Instead of bugging her on Twitter, we started a podcast so we can get people to bug her on our behalf.
Exactly.
So, but she was part of Woodstock. She showed up at Woodstock, right?
She has been. She has appeared in a couple of Woodstocks. Yeah. Along with every other nerd celebrity.
Right. Will Wheaton.
That's everybody. Jonathan Patton, actually. Jonathan Colton appeared at one. John Roderick has been in one.
I've never been asked to or participated in any Woodstock.
We have to change that.
That cannot be true.
We need some Leo in Woodstock, for sure.
But see, I don't have a talent, so it's important, I think, that one have a talent.
You can be like the guy. Go ahead, Storm.
That's the beautiful thing, is we actually look for people who do things that are unexpectedly talented. So
I could set whiskey on fire.
That's
what I'm talking about. So
remember the hip hop group from the 90s, Arrested Development? They had the old guy that just sat in the sort of throne and was wise. That's you. Yeah. That's Leo.
His name was Mr. Wendell.
Yes. It wasn't now.
No. I'm wrong.
Oh.
That's but about that, all I'm capable of now is just kind of sitting there.
You just sit there in the chair rocking. And drink and look regretful.
Yeah.
That'd be great. Set a great tone.
It's more or less than Will Wheaton does.
Yeah.
Are you done with Woodstock? Are you going to do some more?
No, we still do them. We've got one coming up very soon. I think we're like a day away from being able to officially announce it. But we have one coming up in the Pacific Northwest, and we should be back at Comic-Con, San Diego Comic-Con this summer. That's pretty much the only way we know everybody's going to be in the same place and has a night free anymore is at Comic-Con. It's tough to make them happen anywhere else.
You'll have to forgive me, but I don't feel akin with the young people today and their kind of the geek culture thing. I don't understand that.
Well, have we're not. From, oh, go ahead.
Have you ever masturbated to a comic book?
No. No.
Well, I can't help you then.
How about a motion that's comic? It.
I think there's a great divide between those who have and those who haven't. And I'm on the other.
That's very interesting, Leo. You don't see yourself as a part of geek culture, because I think of you as kind of a proto geek icon.
Well,
I remember
that's
watching
it, maybe.
Screensavers.
I'm was before there was geek culture. I was there, and I was kind of the midden, the fertilizer from
the Rosa Parks of geek culture, Leo.
Yeah, that's it. That's exactly it. I made sure that geeks could ride in the back of the bus. Or the front, or whatever part of the bus you want. No, I don't. It's funny. I just don't.
You nailed it.
I just don't feel. I don't understand it, to be honest with you. I don't get that.
Well, what do you mean you don't understand it? This is interesting to me. What do you mean?
It's got good.
It's a whole thing. Well, did you see The Simpsons this week? It was all about the hipsters, and they had left Seattle because it was played out. There were restaurants with two branches there, and I'm not going to let my kids anywhere near that. And they came to Springfield, Missouri, and they were hipsters. They were into, you know, she had a master's degree in mid-century kitsch culture. And I just felt like, you know, they had wallets attached. Do you attach your wallets with chains to your pockets?
No. I used to
a long time ago, but that's really pretty 2002.
It's played out. You've moved on.
Yeah. Sure.
So, see, to me, I just don't, it's like, what?
Well, I do think that geek culture had a rise to power, and now is in the process of becoming played out in that way. I mean, I think it's
mainstream,
like,
think it's and this like, is no good.
Yeah,
this is
exactly
what happened.
Right. It's become mainstream, and now it's not.
I'm a child of the '60s when flower power turned into stretch pants at Kmart's with big daisies on it. It was like it had become pop culture. It had become mass culture, and it was no longer cool.
Yeah, well, there are many aspects of niche culture that are becoming mass culture, and it's like, you know, all
so
these
what's,
niches.
What's
have
the next?
Become
what's
they're
the next big
the
thing? What's the next thing?
Mummies.
It's probably.
I can't think of anything.
I would say it's web series. It's got to be web series. That's
it's not.
Really
it's not like zombies. It's not
it's
even
shown web series.
It's me. I am the next big thing.
I think you are, Paul. Because I've never heard of you, so I think that's what makes it.
That figures.
I think that makes it key.
Yeah, seriously. I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see what happens over the next 10 years. I mean, you think about what geek culture was like 10 years ago, and the way it is now, and it's been a very fast and wild journey from there to here.
So what are the lodestones of geek culture? Is comic books is obviously one.
Mm-hmm. Gaming. I would say gaming's a big part of it.
Gaming. But now even gaming is very divided into different segments. You have you have people who are Mario, like Mario's all, it's all, they're all about Mario or Zelda. That's the Nintendo group.
Right.
And then there's the modern group, the Call of Duty group. That's a very different group. Those two don't.
Well, there's also the people who do tabletop gaming. Like, there are all these different subsets.
That's really out of control. And they have 10-sided dice, and they do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you ever play Dungeons & Dragons, Leo?
I didn't, you know, and I kind of, I don't know why, because that sounds like something
I didn't either.
Watched.
I had the same thing. It just never came up somehow.
I played chess. I didn't. Heard of it. Yeah.
Did you read Lord of the Rings back in the 60s, 70s?
Oh, yeah. I masturbated to Frodo Baggins.
Well, who didn't?
So this is a big weekend for you then, Leo, isn't it?
It is, actually.
And you say you don't understand geek culture. You have masturbated to Frodo Baggins.
Now, actually, I did play a lot of Risk. So somebody's mentioned Risk. I did. See, I think it's a different, I'm of a different era, really, a different generation. I didn't used to feel old, but I'm starting to see a generational rift.
Yeah.
Well,
I hear
big
you.
One.
I think that's
like,
true.
And you're getting old enough. You're not old yet, but you're getting old enough. You're probably starting to see the outline of that.
Oh, yeah. Like, you see people on some social sites that are nostalgic about Pokemon, which I get it. That's been out since the early 90s. But to me,
it's oldies.
That's something. Yeah. That's like that happened like 2 weeks ago, didn't it? To be nostalgic about that. But even though like the specifics change, sort of that vibe remains the same. So even though yeah, geek culture is like very big in the public eye, Big Bang Theory and all that. There's always something underneath that will pop out later. The thing that everyone's making fun of now that 5 or 10 years from now will become the thing that's like, oh, wow, we never appreciated it. Now it's safe to talk about that again.
Well, isn't Big Bang Theory, though, really the end game? I mean, isn't that when you would know it's over because it's now on national network television? And in fact, I think in many ways it's kind of disrespectful. It's kind of like, oh, it's kind of pigeonholing geeks in a certain way that I find offensive.
Maybe. Well,
yeah, I mean, I think
if it's one thing that characterizes geeks, it's that they take offense at everything.
Ah! There you go.
Now, John Roderick is another one who, you know, I think that I've heard him say, I'm not a geek, I'm a dork. That's the thing that you were before there was a geek.
I'd agree with that, actually.
Yeah, it makes sense. And
it's pretty
obvious. You know, geek has become this... it's become a flag that you wave on top of the stuff that you just like because you like it, you know.
Right.
And you know, Star Wars, like, you know, Pawn Storm's... album title, Do You Like Star Wars? The reason that joke is funny is like, of course you like Star Wars. Like, everybody likes Star Wars.
I hate Star Wars. No. I hate Star Wars.
Do you hate Star Wars?
It's terrible.
Stem to stern, you hate Star Wars.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Now you're just being argumentative.
No.
Move to strike.
No, in fact, it, unfortunately, I feel like I cannot express myself about this because I will become a pariah.
Because now all the geeks are going to jump on you,
but it's terrible. It's badly plotted. It's stupid. It makes no sense. It's just crap. George Lucas is a hack.
Wow.
Are you a fan of other science fiction franchises?
I love science fiction. I have to say, I've never been a fan of science fiction on the big screen because I feel like it's too hard to make science fiction well. Make it real. And in the books, it's really vivid because it's. You couldn't make Ringworld into a credible movie because it's too big, it's too elaborate, it's too difficult. And Lord of the Rings, I mean, it was a great. So
you masturbated to Harlan Ellison, though.
I did. That was my problem.
Yeah.
Actually, you know who was really sexy? And it was Robert Heinlein. But that's mostly because he thought women were just objects for fun.
Right, that's sexy.
Sure.
That's very sexy.
You know. don't tell our wives.
Squarespace.
Let me take a break right now. You know what's sexy to me? The idea
that Leo?
This show is going in a good direction.
I actually want to talk to you a little more about this topic because actually I think this is an interesting topic. Yeah, drink some Jaeger. I want to talk more about this. But first, a word from Stamps.com. This is sexy. Printing your own U.S. postage from your computer and printer. Now, that's a party waiting to happen.
Put that stamp on that envelope.
Print my message.
Ain't no party like a postage printing party because a postage print party's got...
Postage!
Stamps!
Lick that stamp.
Well, and that's one of the things that's different because you don't have to lick it and stick it anymore because Stamps.com, you print it out.
Games is fun.
You print it out. And I think a lot of people think that it's all about stamps, but that's just the name. It's not. Mm-hmm. It's about you could print on the envelope. You could print your logo. You could have a little Paul and Storm right there on the logo.
Lick that envelope. Lick that whole envelope.
Print that. Print that logo. Yeah. Oh, you like that logo. You like that logo, don't you? Oh, who's a naughty logo? Oh, look at you. You gonna put something in the envelope? You gonna put it in you gonna seal it?
Wait a minute. Did you you guys must do fulfillment on your CDs, right?
Sure.
Yeah, are you going to the post office and buying stamps?
All the time.
What are you
nuts?
Just
one at a time.
Or
I
worse,
buy them one at a time.
I bet you guys have what's called a Pitney's Bowes postage meter.
No, get that. What?
I know of what you speak. I know the exact.
You don't want that. You got to lease it. You got to pay. It's got special ink. You don't need that. Your computer and your printer can print everything you need. all the fulfillment, if you're selling, maybe you're taking PayPal payments or Amazon, maybe you're doing, you're not doing Etsy. Do you guys do crafts of any kind?
Oh, yeah. I make dioramas out of noodles.
Perfect example.
I need noodle rubs.
The last thing you want to do is spend time doing the mailing. You want to focus on what really counts. Dioramas noodles. Of noodles. So here's the deal. You go to stamps.com. This is the pro tip for mailing. It will help you do all your mailing. You click, you print, you mail. It's got a USB scale, so you know exactly what postage you need to use. And look at that. That's brushed aluminum, kids. That's not some cheap plastic. That is a brushed aluminum scale. And by the way,
I'm going there right now. I'm going to get one of those scales. That looks awesome.
I'm going to get you that for free. Wait a minute. Click the radio microphone up at the upper right hand corner there. And enter the word twit.
Okay, I'm watching the video while I'm doing it on the website.
And
crazy.
Then you're going to see that. Now, wait a minute. I know we have the older scale on there, but we can get you the new scale, I promise you. Here's the deal. For all you got to do is sign up, use the offer code TWIT. You'll get a 4-month trial of stamps.com. You'll get a $5 supply kit. You get the USB scale for free. And I'm going to send you $55 in postage coupons that you can use over the next few months. Your postage is free. Do you understand that? Free. So you could mail. How many CDs would $55 mail out?
At least 800.
Just one, I think, right?
They're really heavy. Yes.
Very
so
large
you need
CDs.
A scale, Jonathan, because no.
Yeah, maybe I'm doing it wrong. I don't know.
I think you're doing it wrong. You need the scale.
I just put $55 on it because I don't want it to get sent back, so I put like extra postage.
Exactly. Have you ever done that? You put three extra stamps because you don't want to get it back?
Sure.
All the time.
Stamps.com. I'm just telling you.
You know, Leo, when I was an undergraduate at Yale University,
you lie.
Many was the time I would sit around with my fellow Ellie.
Eli.
No, I believe we call ourselves Ellie.
Eli's.
Eli. And we said, one day, we will all have a personal computer, and we will use that personal computer to print out postage in our very own homes.
That's exactly right. That's the future. It's now. It's happening at stamps.com. Hey, let me ask you guys. You guys are young enough. You all had computers in college, didn't you?
A couple of years in, I had a Mac SE.
Wow.
Oh.
I had a typewriter. Not an electric, a manual typewriter. That's how I wrote my papers at Yale.
And did you type them on rocks?
On a box?
No, on rocks.
You type it on paper. We had paper. It wasn't that long ago.
As you carried it uphill
you
both
chisel
ways.
Chisel it
the
on
snow.
The rock. No, we had paper. Although in the basement of my dorm at Durfee Hall on the old campus, they had a plaque that said Rackety X Coax Coax, which was the Yale cheer from Aristophanes the Frog. I bet you didn't know that, Paul.
Oh, you must be referring to Paul Roderick, who did not attend Yale University. That was great.
You know that. Ask anything.
Where did Hodgman go? What happened to Hodgman?
Yeah, now you're realizing what trouble you're in. Hodgman.
No, actually, I'm actually thrilled to have Paul Roderick because Hodgman's played out.
Yeah.
Paul Roderick is the new John Roderick. You're making the baby cry, Leo.
You know, it wouldn't be Twit if we didn't make a baby cry.
That's true.
It's kind of the secret to the whole thing. So you had a computer late in, like, the last couple of years. How about you?
I did. I took a computer science class, and so I got an electronic mail account.
Wow.
That was a new thing. And I remember I would send emails to my friends in the class and say things like, I hope you've enjoyed my electronic mail. We all thought it was a big joke.
It was yale.edu. It was. I actually still have a yale.edu address, but we didn't have them when I was in school.
Right.
They gave them to alumni later. That's kind of cool to have. Yale was very early on into email and technology and getting involved in this, but not in my time, no.
No, exciting to be there when it was just starting, though, because it was still like such a crazy idea.
You were there in the 80s or 90s?
90s. I graduated in 89. So
89.
Okay. End of the 80s, yeah.
How about Paul and
Storm? No, sorry, 93 was college. Sorry.
93. He's thinking high school.
I forget.
93. What about you, Paul? What is what?
I bought a 286 the end of my senior year of high school.
And you brought that to
Wow.
And then I upgraded to a 386 partway through college because I wanted to play Wing Commander.
Wing Commander, great game.
I lost most of the fall semester of, what was it, 89? When was it that came out? I think it was fall of 89, I think. I lost most of that semester to playing Wing Commander.
That's awesome. That was a fun game. That it was a lot of CDs.
It was. It was like 800 kabillion. It was floppies back then. It was
floppies?
Like 10 or 12 floppies the first couple copies were, yeah.
Wow.
First, I think like Wing Commander 3, I think, was the first game, certainly I ever owned. I think it was Wing Commander 3 on that had CDs instead of floppies.
I feel sorry for kids in college. It must be today. It must be so distracting. They could
choose. They're a mess.
Well, they've got their computers right in their pockets with the smartphones.
Right.
Imagine that they're pretty much always connected,
right?
Which it seems normal enough to us now, but it seemed like you'd lose a lot of that experience. Like back when we were in college, I remember going to the computer lab. Like I had a Commodore 64, but it didn't quite get the job done.
Wait a minute. You brought a Commodore 64 to college?
It didn't last very long. It did not last
very long. You thought it was a real computer?
No, I originally did. Fortunately,
your roommates must have howled when you brought. Look, I brought my Commodore.
I can't stop playing Chisholm Trail. I can't stop.
Did it have a cassette drive, Storm?
I originally had the cassette drive. I did have the cassette drive. Yes, I did.
That's ambitious. That's optimistic. That you're going to be able to use a Commodore 64 in any way that would be helpful in college is optimistic.
I had the first PC. It had 64K.
Yeah, there you go.
I used WordStar, WordStar program.
Dot commands.
And I took that to college with me.
But you could do word processing with that. I don't know. Could you hand in an all uppercase 40-character across paper to your professor?
You can do that once.
And not necessarily successfully.
I've used a word processor to write this paper.
I used a pen to give you an F.
I have older kids. My oldest daughter is 15, and so I'm sort of in a way, I'm on the front lines of watching this newer generation. You know, I observe them from behind my wall of Xbox 360 games and old school technology. But it is really, it is genuinely fascinating to me to see them. I mean, they were literally born with computers in front of them. My oldest daughter figured out how to use a mouse before she was two. Like, she got the concept of, I move this thing, and this thing on the screen moves accordingly.
What is a mouse?
A mouse. But they, you know, it's cliche how they say, you know, this younger generation is all wired and multitasking and all of that. But it's true. They live on texts and instant messages, and they're fine communicating. That's their default method of communication. And we can bitch about it all we want, but it's the same thing that the older generation said when phones first came into. You know, everyday widespread use, I'm sure. It's just, you know, it's a different method of interacting. I don't necessarily know if it is a worse way of interacting.
You know,
you miss out on things, but you also, it's a different, you know, it's an evolution of, I don't know, society. I don't know what the hell I'm saying.
We didn't even have a phone. I'm just thinking now, we didn't even have a phone in our dorm room. Mm-hmm. We would have
a telephone?
Down.
You did not have a telephone in your room?
I don't think so. Maybe we did. Maybe you could order a phone from the phone company and have it put in your room. I guess you could.
Right. Extra.
Yep. From SNETCO, Southern New England Telephone Company.
My younger daughter. Oh, go ahead, Storm.
I was going to say, that's what the fancy kids did. That's all.
Yeah, it might have been fancy. I had a bong.
Yeah, sure.
And you talked into that.
Hello!
Was it a networked bong?
No, it was not a networked.
Did you buy it from Ma Bong? But my younger daughter, who is 11, had a sleepover at a friend's house just a couple weekends ago. And in their basement, her friends, behind their bar, had a wired telephone. And she thought that was the funniest thing, that they had this telephone that you could only get about 12 feet away from the base on. And it was the first. I realized it was the first time she'd ever seen a wired telephone in person in her life. That made me feel real old real quick.
Well, it's kind of one of the things that interests me is that we started with this geek culture conversation. And what I've noticed is it really is generational, that, what geek culture to you is really very specific to within a couple of years, your age cohort. And you're seeing that with technology in general now, that and so it'll make you feel old faster, because even within a few years, we weren't into Zelda. We were into Galaxian, or I don't know what the hell it is.
Yeah.
Oh, it's true.
They'll overlap, though.
Go ahead, Storm.
Oh, sure. Just going to say they all overlap, and some of them are very short. Like if you weren't in sixth grade in 1992, you wouldn't get this.
Right.
But there are others like Star Wars that span longer periods of time.
But maybe that's why I'm not a Star Wars fan, because I was in college. I remember waiting in line in 1977 to see Star Wars. So I saw it, unlike you guys, I saw it as an adult. Or close to an adult.
That's a big difference.
I was 21. And so I had a very... it really is a child's story. It really is like the Wizard of Oz.
It is.
Yeah.
It is, and it's, very much.
It's inextricably, you know, my own affection for the Star Wars universe. I know they're not perfect movies by any stretch, but they're definitely... It's tied inextricably with...
It's your childhood.
My childhood memories. Exactly. Yes. I was right in the wheelhouse for George Lucas. I was age 7 through 14 when those movies...
So for me to say I don't like Star Wars is offensive in the sense that I'm attacking your something that's at your very core.
But you're sort of not, because we feel the same way about the newer Star Wars movies. Like, we look at those and say, oh, God, they're horrible.
Jar Jar Binks. Everybody hates Jar Jar.
Exactly.
Storm and I were just having this conversation not long ago where, as Storm was saying, like it's a very fine line depending on your age and when a thing happens, how there is a tremendous affection from a lot of people. I've noticed in a number of Reddit comment discussions of people of a certain age and younger, their love for the movie The Goonies. I was just old enough when The Goonies came out that I thought it was ridiculous and terrible and loud and shrill and stupid.
But
you know, then I just turn around and I look at, you know, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory or Star Wars, and I really don't have to complain.
Or the Elmo Grover divide. Like if you grew up on Sesame Street, you know, you loved Grover.
Entire families have been decimated over the Elmo Grover divide.
And for the record, it turns out the Grover camp was right. All right, the Grover camp was right.
Isn't that funny? And I bet you there's a whole generation of kids who will be offended if I said Jar Jar Binks was stupid. They say, what are you talking about? He was the seminal influence in my growing up years. This was Jar Jar was everything to me.
I don't know anyone who is pro Jar Jar. I don't think there's anyone in the world who's pro Jar Jar.
Actually, he's so terrible. He's so terrible.
He was just bad. He's a bad sir. You sir. Hate sir. Yeah.
Well, and then you do this thing also when you have kids. You sort of try to recreate your childhood.
Have you done that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I made my daughter watch Star Wars, and she was like, "Yeah, it's okay.
It's okay."
I was crushed. I was like, "I can't even. I don't even know how to talk."
She's a girl. What does she know?
No, but it's true. Yeah. You look at these old movies, and the effects that you thought were so amazing do not age well.
No. Of course, yeah. And I agree. It's funny how, you know, at a certain stage of life, here's where we just start talking about how old and sad we are. But there's a certain stage of life where you can identify more with this cultural moment, and then the older you get, the more you start to identify with the generational component of your life.
I spent a lot of time thinking about it, because we do geek culture shows. And they don't do well. And I think that the same reason our gaming shows don't do well is because it's a very chopped up segment. There's no, you know, for instance, John Slanina, Jamberby, who's my age, was just saying, we're of the Buckaroo Banzai generation. That's really true. Yeah. But if you say Buckaroo Banzai today, most people go, I don't know what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And so
I think it's a puppet.
Yeah. So you can't.
It should be a puppet. That's how we can reintroduce Buckaroo Banzai to the masses through puppetry.
But it's hard to do a show for gamers, and it's hard to do a show for geek culture, because there isn't one thing.
Yeah, it's a medium more than a culture. You know, it's like talking about gamers is like talking about you know, piano music. Well, there's a bunch of different types of piano music.
Right.
Ragtime is the only kind of piano music.
I would submit it's gotten worse because of how fast culture is moving, that it is really now a very narrow slice. I could ask you five questions and name and say how exactly how old you are by just saying Brady Bunch, or no. Buckaroo Banzai, yes or no. Mario, are you Mario Kart? Or are you, you could immediately tell how old somebody is from those specific questions. It's very
I can tell how old you are from one question. I ask them, how old are you?
Wow.
That's really smart, Paul. That's a shortcut.
I cut through all the crap, yeah.
That's a Yale shortcut.
Yeah. I was going to say, I learned that in my days back in Yale.
You must be a management consultant.
you took Shortcuts 101, right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Let's talk about modern culture. What are you guys into? What are you excited about today? By the way, we've completely... But not only did we lose Hodgman early on, but Paul Roderick is now bored to death. And all we have joining us now, Paul Hodgman's bedroom.
I'm into beds. John Hodgman's bedroom. I think beds are really awesome.
He made it. I got to say, it's made now.
It is neat and tidy.
Even the children have left.
Yeah. Do you know what's interesting, Leo? I find it harder and harder to be excited by current things. Cultural stuff.
You see, you're jaded and bored like the rest
right?
of us now.
Yeah, that's I feel like I only listen to old music anymore. Because I'm a musician, I get this all the time. You know, it's like the classic last interview question. Who are you listening to now? And I'm like, the Beatles.
Well, it's especially challenging for a musician because you're supposed to be, this is your medium. You're supposed to be an expert and you're supposed to know who the hot new things are. And it's the Beatles.
Yeah. And the truth is I don't like the hot new things.
Yeah.
Because I'm an old man. I'm an old man who's very sad and tired.
I would submit for me, maybe this is true for you, it's more cowardice. Because the other thing that happens is if you say Mumford and Sons, you're in a box.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, you're saying something that is supposedly totally revealing about who you are. And you don't want to do that. Beatles is safe.
Yeah, that's true. And musical taste has always been a thing that is, I've always felt shy about saying who I liked.
So here's a question. Can Paul McCartney represent fairly, in a fair representation in Nirvana, could Paul McCartney be the lead singer in Nirvana? I say no.
As a going concern right now?
Well, he did it, didn't he, at this concert?
Well, they sang a song.
He played Kurt Cobain, but he did the Kurt Cobain part.
No, well, you know. I mean, the thing is...
That's like, weird.
Yeah, when Paul McCartney was doing his thing with the Beatles, like they were tapping into what was happening
at that
moment. It's
like Frank Sinatra playing Mick Jagger.
That I can see. I would pay a lot of money to see
that. That would be awesome.
Yeah. I can't get no satisfaction.
That would be pretty amazing. Yeah, no, of course Paul McCartney can't. I mean, you talk about a generational divide.
That was a strange mix. I don't know why they
Jeepers.
Did that.
Yeah. No, I didn't see it. Did you see it or hear it?
I didn't. I just heard about it.
I saw it. I mean, it was enjoyable for, you know, they only did one song. As that group, and it was an enjoyable cover song, like you'd see any other covering somebody else. Covering it with, you know.
Shouldn't Paul McCartney go away though? I mean, really, let's remember the Beatles.
You know what? It's funny. I sort of normally would feel that way, and then I happened to be up and watched. I caught the last couple of songs of Chris Martin, and then whatever his name is from Coldplay, and then Paul McCartney came on, and he just put on a good.
That's great.
Paul McCartney is probably my favorite musician of all time. And it just sort of, it doesn't matter to me that maybe he's not doing whatever is the newest, hottest thing right now. He just has this natural talent that will always be part of him. So
he's royalty. At this point, he's royalty.
Really, he is
he really
royalty.
Is.
And just like the Queen, he should just die.
No. Damn. Squarespace.
That's a joke. That's a joke. I'm joking. I went for the joke. I went for the cheap joke.
He should die just as the entire Hodgman family has been murdered.
He should either die or should jump out of a helicopter with Daniel Craig. That would be okay.
That would be amazing.
If he dies tomorrow, we know who's responsible, all right?
It's my fault. I've had a little too much, what is this, Ararat Armenian brandy. With marshmallows. Do not mix your marshmallows and brandy, kids. That's one thing I learned at Yale, right? Right, Paul?
That's absolutely right. Yeah. I learned it in my third form at Yale.
Third form. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We called them forms.
Sure, because it was on the British model.
No, we didn't.
Sure.
No, we didn't.
I did. I have to say, I have to confess, I learned one thing I did learn. In fact, it's probably the only thing I learned at Yale was not to drink. Because I drank so much that I realized that I was not going to have a liver if I I didn't graduate, but I learned not to drink.
You learned how to hold your liquor. You learned how to drink responsibly.
Drink responsibly.
Like a Yale man would.
There was so much booze. Now, I went there. I was young. I was below drinking age when I went there. And they don't care. They said, I have a Bloody Mary. It's time for the big game.
So they were still talking like that when you were there?
Yes, we all talk like that.
We had some fun with that.
I went to Yale with a guy named Dink Morgan.
Dink Morgan?
Dink Morgan. He used to snort cocaine with $100 bills.
That's the only way he could talk without letting the pipe fall out of your teeth.
It did not open his teeth. So let me ask.
God.
So you were in the Whiffen Poofs.
That's right. Acapella, old chum. Acapella.
I love the Whiffen Poofs. Give us a little chorus. We are little lost lambs. Let's all do it together.
Ooh, the table's down at Maury's.
Where the place where Louis dwells. Bah, yeah.
Nobody wants to hear the Whiffen Poof song.
I love that song.
I do too.
We are little lost lambs who have gone astray. Bah, bah.
Yeah.
that's my new ringtone for when you call me, Leo.
But in that song, it's all actual places. So there is a Maury's.
There is a Maury's, yeah.
I believe Maury's went bankrupt over the last few years.
They're back. They closed for a while, but they're back. I haven't been there in their new incarnation. But yeah, it was this weird throwback restaurant, like members only restaurant, and the Whiffen Poofs sing there every Monday night. It's kind of awesome.
The place where Louis dwells was Louis Lunch, the originator of the hamburger.
Yeah.
Sure.
Sure.
You mean the hamburger?
I'm sorry, the hamburger.
The hamburger.
How can I eat a hamburger? I can't open my mouth. How do I?
My teeth, if I opened, the money would fall out, so I have to close. Our show today is brought to you by Audible. Now, surely you guys could get behind Audible. Where the hell is Hodgman? He's got a book on Audible.com, and is he here? No.
He's at Audible headquarters right now.
Recording book 4, probably. In fact, Colton, you're on those books, too.
I am on those books, yeah. So in a way, I'm on Audible.com.
You are. Performed The Furry Old Lobster on the first one.
I did.
The areas of my expertise.
Mm-hmm.
You sang the songs of the states?
Yes.
I did sing the songs of the states. John Roderick is on the most recent one as well. John Roderick did a few bits with Hodgman on the most recent one as well. So
let's not mention him. He's not here.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Screw him.
Yeah.
Stricken from the record.
He's stricken from the record. He's not in the record. But what is in the record is Audible, which is the greatest source of audiobooks. I tell you one thing that happens as life takes over. You know, in college you do a lot of reading. I remember going to the cross-campus library and falling asleep over Ulysses. Actually, I still fall asleep over a book. That's why I cannot read a book. I'll read one page and it's... It's right away. It's a great way to go to sleep, but I want to read, and this is where Audible is great. While I'm in the car and I can't fall asleep, or I'm at the gym and I'm working out, or even while I'm doing housework, walking the dog, I listen to audiobooks from audible.com, and they're so great. 100,000 titles, everything. Nowadays, it's just kind of done. It's the done thing. When you put out a book, it's on Audible as well as in print. And that's fantastic because it means that all the new books are available for you, but also all the classics. If one of the things that Audible's done is they've gone back. When I first joined Audible in 2001, they didn't have much science fiction. They literally have created a program called Audible Frontiers where they are recording the great science fiction books that were never recorded. If you have not read The Hobbit, I don't know how that could possibly be. Before you go see the movie, read it. Lord of the Rings, read it. So many great novels, so many great nonfiction books, historical books, technology. It's just an amazing collection of wonderful. And I always say reading. I know everybody says, oh, you shouldn't say reading. It's listening. But it's whatever it is, it's available for you right now. And I'm going to tell you how you can get three books. We're going to give you two books via our offer. This is audible.com/22. That's the you'll sign up for the Platinum Plan. That's two books.
Jesus.
An old man said to me.
He's back.
Is this still happening?
It's still. You wandered off, so, and the show's still happening. Going on.
I went away and learned a song and had a wassail with my friends.
You had an entire career in the time that this show has been going on.
You guys are still doing this. I can't believe it.
I've been sitting here for a half hour going, where's Hodgman? I hope Hodgman comes back soon. I hope he has a song for us when he comes back.
Audible.com/twit2. Sign up for the I guess that's the Platinum account. That's two books. Your first two books are free. Your first month is free. Cancel at any time. Pay nothing. The books are yours to keep. I know that sounds like a ripoff. I mean, like you're ripping them off. But no, you can do that. They encourage you. Go ahead. Your first two is free. Try it. Get the areas of my expertise. Get the new book. That is all. Get the what's the first one called? More information than you require. It's all there, audible.com. And now here's the third book, a wonderful book by Brandon Sanderson. It's actually a novella called Legion. It's kind of an interesting, it's like a murder mystery. He's a detective who uses his multiple personalities to solve mysteries. It's actually very cool. It's not exactly sci-fi. It's not exactly fantasy. It's unique, but it's yours for free. You don't even have to be an Audible member. And if you are an Audible member, it's still yours for free. Just go to audible.com/Sanderson, S-A-N-D-E-R-S-O-N. A fabulous book. John Hodgman is on Audible, all three of his books. He's read them out loud. Now, John, I got to say, one of the things that about that is all is that it's about Ragnarok. The end of the world.
Yes, that's true.
Which is 8 days from now.
Eight more shopping days till Ragnarok.
What should we do to prepare for the end of the world?
I don't know if there's anything you can do at this point, Leo. I think it's all over. You're hunkered down there in Petaluma. You have stockpiles of alcohol.
Absolutely. People thought that we were building this $1 million studio as a video studio. It's not. It's a shelter.
I've been there. It takes a 45-minute elevator ride to get down to the basement where you are.
So it looks like that you can see the great outdoors here. That's a lie. That's a green screen.
No. So it's clear that you're already well insulated from the Omega Pulse, the dog storm, everything that's going to come down.
This may be the last place standing.
That may very well be. And that's why I need to get in there as soon as possible.
We've got stockpiles of rum, red wine, and 223 ammo,
and good cheer, I dare say as well.
The people who are working here are cheering pretty hard because they know they're going to be safe.
The Mayans predicted that the world was going to end on December 21st, and
this show is going to air on December 23rd.
If you're not watching this, it happened.
Yeah, but if you're watching this, don't blame me. Blame the ancient Mayans, because I'm starting to think those guys were dumb.
You wrote a whole book about it.
They didn't know how to make smooth pyramids. Why should we trust them?
Ah.
I'm not going to let them sully my good name in the disaster preparedness community.
If it doesn't work out, I'm going to blame them. I'm just going to say they were dum-dums, they got the calendar wrong, and it's all going to happen next year instead.
I've often wondered, because there have been so many preachers, so many prophets, so many soothsayers who have predicted the end of the world, and it must be kind of embarrassing when they get up to midnight on that day, and it hasn't happened. I've always wondered, how do you recoup from that? How do you recover after having said the world is going to end and it isn't? So, and now you've written an entire book about the end of the world, and you're already right. backing down a little bit.
Well, I'm just saying, I will be very sorry if the world doesn't end when I predicted it, because then I'll look foolish.
Okay.
But thinking, I am preparing for that most terrible eventuality, that I'm wrong. And I don't like to think about it. No one likes to think about it. No. But it would be foolish not to prepare, because if I am wrong, then I'm going to have people who gave their life savings away. From the mouths of babes, everyone.
These are all lies.
Your familiar does not have confidence in your story there, Jonathan.
You have to understand that in my survival bunker, I have a little man who serves me, just like Marlon Brando on the island of Dr. Moreau.
I don't know.
In any case, I am preparing for the terrible eventuality that I am wrong, and that is why my survival bunker comes in handy twice. If the blood wave comes, I'll be prepared, and if it doesn't come, then I'll be protected from you losers who gave all your money away and bought only white clothing like I told you to.
JohnHodgman.com. Please get the book so that you know what's coming. You'll have 9 days to read it.
Right. Thank you. I would love... I enjoyed making the book very much. The audiobook in particular features my friend Jonathan Colton.
Yeah, if you'd been here, you probably would have heard us talk about that.
Oh, well,
Leo John, Laporte Byrne.
John Potter came by.
Here I am. Did you miss me?
Oh, Paul Roderick.
Apparently he's on it as well.
Oh, shit.
I can't say that. What's the matter with you?
Oh, boy.
Drunk on Rumble, Vince.
John Hodgman's posset recipe will be on his website, johnhodgman.com. That's also where you can find out more about his book, That Is All, and upcoming engagements right up to the day of Ragnarok.
On the day of Ragnarok, but this will have aired after Ragnarok. So if Ragnarok does not happen, may I say that Jesse Thorne and I will be doing a live Judge John Hodgman at Sketchfest in San Francisco, not very far from you, Leo.
I love that.
On January 25th of 2013.
Oh, we should go to that.
Yeah, you should. If you'd like to come, I'll put you on a list.
Put me on the list. I'm on the list for Snoop Dogg on Saturday, and then I would be on the list for you in 3 weeks.
All right. Well, you don't have to work. You don't have to brag. It's fine.
It's a little brag. Small brag. Humble brag.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Hey, John Roderick, is there anything you'd like to plug besides your fine group, the Winter Solstice?
Long Winters.
Buy my CD.
Roderick on the Line is a fantastic podcast. It is the reason the podcasts were invented.
It is. I made Merlin Mann the man he is today. I made him famous with our show, mm-hmm. MacBreak Weekly, and then he just shuns us and goes mm-hmm. on and does a series of fabulous podcasts without me. But that's okay.
He can be a shunner sometimes.
He's a shunner. I like the Dr. Seuss hat. That's very festive.
Yeah, I'm drunk.
It's the Jägermeisters. Paul and Storm, they go together. That's Storm de Costanza. Do you celebrate Festivus given the heritage of your Costanza family?
I'm actually kind of a pizza bagel, so I've got the Jewish thing and the Italian thing happening.
Yeah. Wow. That's confusing.
I just celebrate. That's my way.
You know, the Pope is tweeting now.
I am rapt with attention for the Pope's tweets. He's because tweeting. His hat is even funnier than mine.
Yeah. It, actually, it almost looks like the Pope's hat right there.
This was the Pope's hat.
That is Storm. That is Paul above him in the grid. He went to Yale.
I did. It says so right here on my sweatshirt.
Actually,
he went to Yale to get that sweatshirt.
I just want to say that I can tell by the typography that's Yale as in lock, not Yale as in university.
Yes.
The word man's locksmith sweatshirt. that's just a locksmith's jumper.
I have been discovered and undone.
Curses. Undone! You can catch Paul and Storm also on Geek and Sundry and see their brand new show, which debuts when, sirs?
January 15th.
January 15th.
That'll be a day that lives in infamy.
We hope. Many.
What's it called again?
It's called Learning Town. No, it's not. It doesn't have a URL.
No, it does. No, it does.
There is a learningtown.com that goes to some organization of people who apparently are dedicated to educating children.
That's a mistake.
For some stupid reason.
Waste.
Learningtown.geekandsundry.com.
Learningtown.com actually redirects to Yale University.
There you go.
A village. It's a village for learning professionals. But if you go to learningtown.geekandsundry.com, you'll get the Learningtown trailer.
Yes.
Which is.
There will be an actual series that will appear on January 15th.
And some in this room have seen it and say it is good.
Some claim.
Jonathan Coulton's latest album, one he did ironically with our unexpected guest, Paul Roderick, is called One Christmas at a Time. Who did the illustration
one
on that?
One Christmas at a time.
Isn't it great? It's a fellow named Zach Rock that we met at a tweet up in Seattle. And
is it supposed to be medieval kind of illustration?
No, it's us hanging out Christmas morning the way we always do, with a hot chocolate, and I play some songs, and Roderick hasn't brushed his hair, and we're in our robes. I don't want to talk about it.
JonathanColton.com/OCAAT. For one Christmas.
You've gotten pretty heavily mallowed, haven't you, Leo? Since the last I saw.
At the mallow. Ladies and gentlemen, we thank you so much for joining us for this special holiday edition of TWIT.
The wrapping papers put away.
That's John Roderick singing.
See, if this were a normal song, I'd be able to talk up the intro, but it has some sort of strange convention at the beginning where the intro isn't where it should be.
That's how we do.
Yeah. You didn't play the guitar long enough at the beginning.
Sorry.
For me to say, I wish you all a very, whatever you celebrate, whether it is winter solstice or Festivus or Kwanzaa or Hanukkah or Christmas, that you have a wonderful holiday season. And we thank you for being here for what is inevitably going to be seen as the last Christmas ever. The day Twit jumped the shark. We thank you all for being here. Happy Festivus. We'll see you next time on This Week at Twit. And now another Twit is in the can.
Yeah, yeah. Cthulhu Fatata.
I've never meant those words more seriously.
It's almost time to eat again. The first ham sandwich shows up. Curling up on the couch to wait until next year. In the week between, all your drunken uncles and cousins, cousins all on the scene. Week between, New Year's resolutions and conversation.
Is that from the CD or was that just random music?
No, that is from the CD. That is from the CD.
And what was that song?
That's called The Week Between.
Oh, that's the one you were talking about. That's cool.
Yeah.
Very beautiful, as always. You do such great
stuff. I just realized we look like the saddest version of the Brady Bunch of all time on these squares.
Yeah.
Kind of true.
What happened to Paul?
here.
It was, and it was, you know, I admit I did not want to do this show.
Leo, I love you for your honesty. I do.
Thank you, Leo.
But you know what? The first time we did the show, I think it was we were doing the cruise, or maybe it was the second time we did the show. It was the first cruise. And at the end of that show, after we had spent all this time talking about the cruise, you were like, I don't think they got enough people going on that cruise. I think they didn't get the numbers they wanted. It was fantastic.
I wasn't planning to buy a Ford, Leo.
You better buy one now.
I know. Oh, well, now.
I'm going to buy one, and I'm going to mail my check with my postage printed at stamps.com.
You know what is my fervent hope? That next year, we could all be together in the same room doing this fine.
Let's do it. Next year in Jerusalem, guys.
In Jerusalem.
Yes. I'll do it. I'll buy my ticket.
That's awesome. Next year in Jerusalem.
Great idea.
That's the title of the show, by the way. Next year in Jerusalem.
Fantastic.
In the holy city.
Absolutely.
Thanks for having me on the show, Leo. It was nice meeting you.
Hey, Paul, it's so great to meet you. I'm a huge fan, actually. I was just joshing with you, but I love the show you do. And I haven't heard your music, but I will be listening to the Colton CD and the fabulous. I've been a fan of the Decemberists since the beginning. So
yeah, thanks. We're a great band. Yeah.
I look forward to hearing your music. No, that's awesome.
I look forward to hearing it too.
That's great. It's so nice to meet you, Paul. I'm thrilled that you could be here, actually. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was great.
Tell them how much you love the screensavers.
I do. I love screensavers. The flying toaster was my favorite.
Wow, that's a great screensaver. One of the best. We used to get that a lot. So it's interesting, you know, your take that I because of geek culture, that I was geek culture. I have no association with that. It's so funny.
No, I know. Well, it's funny. The generational thing is big, and geek culture was not a thing. It was not a thing,
right?
You know,
and it's. I feel a little weird about this. So, I mean, to me, it's not culture. It's pop culture, but I don't get it.
I'm with you. I think it's a fascinating. It's a fascinating topic for discussion.
Yeah.
Perhaps on future shows.
Yeah, I thought we actually had a pretty good conversation.
We did.
So
we
thank
had a nice
you
talk.
Guys. Thank you so much. You guys are wonderful. I'm so glad we could do this.
Thanks, thank Leo.
Leo.
Sorry we badgered
thank
you into
you,
doing it.
No, I'm sorry.
I was an itinerant member of this year's party.
I feel like I'm touching Storm now. I want to I want to thank you, Storm, for actually. You know, the truth is, the reason I didn't want to do it is I didn't want to put upon you guys. I didn't want to overstay my welcome. So I'm thrilled that you wanted to do it, actually.
Oh, it's totally fun.
It's
totally
fun for me.
Fun.
I really love it.
Yeah, way fun.
We were thinking, oh, we can't make those guys. We can't make those guys do it all again.
Lies, huge lies, Leo.
No, I'm actually dead serious here. I can't. These guys are now all big celebrities, big stars. I can't make them do this again because they get no remuneration.
This is the only time we see each other all year.
Man. Yeah, right.
That's true. That's true.
This is my only opportunity.
So if we didn't do it, I wouldn't have to see you, Paul?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you could look at it that way if you want
to. I'm going to see you for many days, and I'm looking forward to it.
Are you guys going on the road together in your bathroom?
No, we're going on the cruise together.
Oh, the cruise. I think that's really amazing. You guys get to go a test cruise and then come back and do the real thing.
Yeah, it is kind of amazing.
Thanks for inviting me.
Is that because you sell so many cabins?
They do it for large enough groups. They do that kind of thing.
That's awesome.
For the management to go. Plus, and it's nice because
one of the children in this house is crying, so I got to go. I'm sorry.
See you, John. Take care.
But I love you all very much, and merry and happy Anton LaVey miss to you.
See you soon, John.
Likewise.
Do what thou wilt is the whole of the law.
But as I was saying, it's nice because we actually get to have some semblance of a vacation on this one because on the next one, it's so sort of, you know, we're just going and going. And when we're not working, we're being celebrities and all of that.
Yeah, people don't realize that because I've done that for years, that when you're working on a cruise, it isn't a vacation as much because you have to perform.
Yeah, no, it is a lot of work. I mean, it's fun. It's fun work, but it's a pretty intense week. You know,
I have to say,
I'm always exhausted.
I think you guys, that's a huge group. I've never heard of such a big group. You guys are doing very well.
Yeah. It's amazing. I can't believe. You know, I'm just every time
RCL must be thrilled that you decided to move over to them. Frankly,
Yeah, well, really, they were the line that had the spaces that we needed. The biggest thing was they have this conference center, a 4,000 square foot conference center that's going to be for us a 24/7 game room or anything we want room.
That's a huge freaking ship.
It is. Yeah, it's really big.
It's really big.
It's not even their biggest. They have the super huge ones that have it's like two skyscrapers going down the side of the ship, and there's like a zip line going down the central area. It's ridiculous.
So, Storm, do you put this together? Is this kind of your thing, or?
Oh no, we the three of us really put it together. We have some other folks that help with it. We each have
Paul and Storm do an enormous amount of work for it. I mean, we've sort of all found our specializations. And me and my assistant, who has sort of become my manager, Drew, have sort of created the software that does the booking and,
That's neat.
Yeah, it's great.
We've talked about doing a TWIT cruise. We're going to do a cruise to Hawaii in December. And I just decided it's too off purpose for us. We, you know, it distracts from the main job, and I don't really want the staff to enjoy themselves that much. It's too fun.
Well, if you change your mind, give us a call. Give us a call.
You know, if we did a TWIT cruise, it would be great to bring you guys along.
Oh, sure. Or if you need any pointers on the cruise biz.
Well, the guy, you know, I do these Insight cruises, formerly Geek Cruises. And so the guy who does that was offering it at TWIT cruise.
Oh, sure.
So he does all the work.
Sure. You got the hookup.
Yeah. It's an interesting idea. I agree with you, Jonathan, though. The idea of having everybody in a real world, in a meat space, is kind of an amazing thing.
It's a powerful thing. It's a powerful thing because you forget, you know, you have all these online interactions and it's just a very different experience from getting together with people and seeing them to get together with each other. I mean, that's the most exciting thing is that, you know, I feel like after having done this a few years, if we stop doing it, they would keep doing it themselves. Yeah. Like, they
That's
don't need
true.
Us at all.
The Geek Cruises, it's about 50% or more, maybe now 70% returnees. Yeah. It's I see the same people every year. And that's really what it's become. It's their thing. Oh, we're going to, all our friends, you know everybody. And so it's become this group that does stuff together. And that actually is the benefit of it, I think. It's really amazing.
I agree. Yeah.
And the group, like, even within this group, like, there's some people who absolutely embrace the whole being offline.
That's the challenge, isn't it? Yeah.
And then there's a whole other batch. Like, they've developed their own shipboard intranet, like, sort of, they call it TwitR, like pirates, where, you know, it's sort of an onboard messaging system that just our people can.
Oh, that's
can
interesting. Get. We ended up doing that on the first Geek Cruise I went on. We sat up in the library and I was Google. And somebody was Yahoo. We created a little small network, and that was the only way we could get online.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. Hey, guys, really, thank you. I appreciate
you
doing this.
Thank you, Leo.
It's something I look forward to all year long. Thank you, Paul, Storm. Yeah.
We are all going to be out there over the course of Sketchfest. We're doing, I couldn't say it on the air because I don't know that's official, but we are doing a Woodstock Founders Night. February 1st, I want to say, there at Sketchfest. So.
Well, let's coordinate so you can come up here. One of the things that we can't do,
That'd
and I wish
great.
We could do, is a performance of some kind. I would love. We have the space here,
and we've had bands before.
We've had performances. We have a place we could get you a stage, and I would love to have like a mini, just a couple of songs, but a mini performance would be so awesome.
Yeah, that would be great.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Bye.
Thanks, Leo.